Danny Ainge, CEO for the Utah Jazz, and is now postseason comments addressing the media. Can we throw to it? Let's get over to the practice facility.
Danny, good morning. Hey, a lot of people ask, you know, the direction, and can you maybe help us understand what the, if you're looking for guards, you're looking for wings, or all the above in this next phase?
Let me ask you, leave the mic with him for a second. What do you think the direction is, Craig? Just give me your thoughts on it.
Obviously, youth is one. Athleticism, it would be another. Length would be one. Defending would be, I think, another high-level need or want. But I only call games, and you get to select the player.
It was a good answer. You answered your own question. I tell my grandchildren that all the time. You can answer that question.
Anything else?
I mean, we want good players. Yeah. We want a team that is better than the 23rd ranked team in the NBA. So, yeah, all of the above.
What are your thoughts on the draft, both just at the top and the overall depth of it?
Yeah, so it's a unique draft. I think it's harder to find, you know, franchise-altering players in this draft than some drafts. I mean, last year you had, like, the top three were pretty well-defined, even by this time. Maybe not the exact order, but some order, the top three. I think this year it's not. I'm not sure who those are. But I do believe that we'll be able to find some good players in this draft.
With multiple draft picks and a lot of cap space, what optionality do you have this offseason?
Yeah, lots of good options. Good question. And that's what we're trying to keep is our flexibility and options open. Our plan is not to come to training camp with six kids under 20 years old. That's not a real good option for anybody. I can't say that won't happen and say that's not like option A or option B. Maybe not option C.
Danny, Jay-Z, when we were talking to him, you know, a couple of weeks ago, said that...
By the way, Jay-Z misses all of you. And he's doing very good. I talked with him this morning. He's going to do his 2,500 steps today and watch some film, get ready for the draft. So he's doing well.
Good to hear.
But he says hi to all of you. And I miss him as much as you. Too much work.
We were talking to him and you know, he said one of his goals is to trade for a significant player, you know, and as part of this rebuild, if not this summer, then next. What kind of star would you be looking for in such a trade? And how do you see that trade landscape kind of panning out over the course of this particular offseason?
You know, this has been talked about a little bit. I mean, quite a bit, actually, I think. I guess the best way to explain that is, you know, like in my experience in Boston when we were there and we had Paul Pierce, and Paul was a terrific player, an all-star player, Hall of Fame player, and you know, our plan was to we lost 19 games in a row in 2007, and our plan was Kevin Durant, but when the lottery came around, we got knocked back three spots to number five, and our plan changed immediately, and we were able to eventually land Ray Allen and KG, which were never available before that moment in time, but we were there and we were ready. So it took a lot of good fortune. Obviously, it took some bad fortune to go win a championship, because if we'd have drafted KD, which was a top plan, we probably wouldn't have won a championship unless for quite a while as a young player. So, but the bottom line is obviously either of those are very good options. But we didn't have all of those options in front of us. In the NBA, we're trying to find good players, like Jay-Z said. That's our objective. We've been close. We felt like we've been close once in this process that would have changed the dynamic of our team immediately and the direction, and would have been much more clear to your question, what kind of players do you need? Then you have the answer. But that hasn't happened, and we do have assets and we do have flexibility. So we don't want to panic. We don't want to go from the 23rd best team and worst team in the NBA, or 23rd best team in the NBA, to the, 18th best by giving up a bunch of things either. Like, that's not our objective. Our objective is longevity and quality going forward. Good quality. Sorry, I mean good longevity, yeah.
With the number of young players coming into the league now, what age or, when do you guys start tracking these players, these young players coming into the league?
I just got back from the Hoop Summit.
USA, yes.
Yeah, USA versus the world team, the best international players, all in one setting in Portland. And there were a few future NBA players there that were 17. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, we track them even younger than that. We have a grassroots group here in the organization that is at high school games all year long. And we'll spend the entire summer at sanctioned high school games, I would say, and that are at all the AAU programs that are sanctioned by the NBA, which is getting more and more.
Anything up there? Any names you want to throw out there?
No, I should stay away from the names of the 17-year-olds. Yeah.
Curious, you've made the midseason trades with veterans, which has taken, a 500 start, 26-26, and ended 5-25. In your mind, why was that the way to go instead of making those trades earlier at the start of the season and then having a better draft pick later?
I think that's a very good question, and I think a lot of people have that. That's been answered a lot, too, and for some reason there seems to be some confusion on that. But if we just had a bunch of young players in the draft, we just had 6 draft picks, and we had the ability to go trade for a franchise-changing player, we had to change the whole team. Like, we don't want to go get a franchise player, but because we have Lauri Markkanen as an example, as one of our good players, and others, we don't feel like we have to make a wholesale change. Like, we can try to find. Like, the last 2 years, I'm not sure, last year, we knew what our team was. And I think they surprised themselves and surprised us, like how good that team was to start the season. Again, I will say this, though, that records are deceiving, I think. I mean, obviously it always matters a record at the end of the season, but I think that our objective is to, find a player or two, and we're ready to roll. We're ready to go big game hunting. And that hasn't happened in the last 2 years. But if we start all over, like then we're 3 years possibly or 4 years from being anywhere. We feel like we're closer than that and we have a chance. I mean, we're going all in this summer to try to figure out what we can do to get better. When I say all in, that doesn't mean that we're going to throw all our chips in and like championship or bust. I'm saying our mindset is that we're doing only to try to win. That's our only objective for the first through till we get to July. And if we don't land anything, we don't make any deals, we don't land anything, then our direction could change at that moment and wait till the next time that we can try to build a roster. Does that make sense? Did I answer that? Not really.
So did you want to have a team in place in case you made a move that you could win right then? Is that what you're saying? You want to have the veterans to put around somebody if you acquired somebody, say, in January?
That's the benefit of it. Yeah, like there's another way to do it and just get rid of all of our good players and have a chest full and then try to build it that way. That's a possibility. But, like I said, with in the Boston scenario I used earlier, going from the beginning of the season and losing – and we're the second worst team in the NBA, and we get the number 5 pick, which is not going to change our franchise at all. Only the number 1 and 2 picks are going to change it, right? So there's no guarantees in this business at all. That's why you can't just have a plan that is like what you're going to get. Like, we didn't have a plan. We didn't have a plan when we traded Paul Pearson and Kevin Garnett and got Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, the next 2 drafts. Like, those things they work out. But you put yourself in position to do that. Does that make sense? I mean, but to answer your question, yeah. Like, we're not as far. We're a big trade away, right? So we explored that all summer, last summer.
Are you interested in extending Lauri Markkanen, or do you want to let that play out?
I would just prefer not to talk about that, but I mean, I think it's pretty clear that Lauri Markkanen is a very good player. We love him. Yeah, we'd like to have him around.
And Will talked about how for the rookies, it was about putting them in uncomfortable situations and watching them grow. I just want to get your take on just how do you think, what was their growth like over the last month and a half, 2 months of the season?
Well, first I will say that, you know, it's not ideal to play your young players with all of your veterans out, because then it puts a lot of undue pressure on them. I mean, so as an example, Keontae, I thought had a very good year. He had some ups and downs, and I kind of like that he had those ups and downs. I kind of like the fact that the scouting, the most important person to stop on our entire team the night, many nights the second half of the year was him. So the best defender was guarding him. The team defensive schemes were to stop him. And so he had to face some of that that he probably wouldn't face if Lauri and Colin and JC were all healthy. So it's not ideal. But there's value in that too.
Keontae has talked about his relationship with Avery Bradley a little bit, but can you describe the benefit of having Avery Bradley with you in the front office?
Yeah, so Avery is one of my favorites ever. Avery was not my hire, however. I introduced Avery to Will and to Justin and told Avery, like, you got to prove to them that they need you. And but I'm a big fan of him. I loved him in Boston and my time with him. He's a real pro. I think he has a calm demeanor that he can relate to people very well. There's been other young players on the staff that have told me the same things, or of the players that have told me the same thing about Avery. So we're excited to have Avery here, but I think he can be a mentor to some of them. I'm not sure he knows for sure if he wants to get in the world of coaching or the world of front office, but he'll do a little bit of both. But he does have that calm, quiet way of him that I think he can get through to players. And he also has an intensity on the defensive end that I think can hopefully help our guards better next year.
Danny, I wanted to ask you just in terms when you communicate with Will about plans both in the immediate and long-term future, what are those communications like between you and he?
Will and...
Yourself.
So Will and Justin talk every day. And I would say Will and I talk every other day. I mean, when they're on the road. I mean, talk every day when they're here. But, there's constant communication with Will about these questions that you're asking. Like, he doesn't have any doubts of what we're doing. He has questions, and we talk them through. And, like, there's no guarantee that everything we're doing is 100% right. But we feel like we have a very good plan and a good group to accomplish our goals.
If you look back at your two builds in Boston, there were kind of unique pieces that just stuck around the whole way. Kendrick Perkins, Marcus Smart, there were lots of turnover, but they held. What were the characteristics of those players that was why you held them the whole time? And are there any players on this group that you've seen have those characteristics?
Yeah, so, those characteristics are just toughness and, you know, that competitive fire that is their strength. Over their skills, that competitive fire is what attracted me. Like Tony Allen was another one. He didn't stick with us, but that's a whole nother story. But I think that those kind of characteristics, I would say the guy on our team this year that exemplified that the most is Chris Dunn. Chris gave us a defensive presence more than anybody else on the perimeter. And so whether it's a 10th man role or a starter, I don't know the answer to that going forward, but I think that he has a role in the NBA, and we liked what he brought to the table in the same regard.
Kind of piggybacking off of the question about the young guys and their growth this season, and you said it's not ideal for them to be playing not without the veterans. Do you think that maybe their growth is stalled a little bit because they were playing with each other so much, and it's going to be so much different when you actually have the team that's going to go for it, that they're going to be playing a different style of basketball, their roles are going to be completely different?
I think it was better. I mean, like, so especially in Keontae's case, who played most of the year here with the big club, I think he had both. He was able, so he was able to see both. And he's able to, he's a smart kid, and he was able to see, wow, that's hard. I'm not sure he understands everything of why it's hard, but like we've been able to talk about that. And I think that he had enough success to have confidence in his future and yet enough to learn and enough bad play that will get him in the gym and put light a fire under him as well. So it's a pretty good combination for him. With Taylor, I thought Taylor pretty much played the same role that he'll play. In the last game, he got more opportunities. They actually ran some offense for him. They did a little bit of that in the G League as well. And he's just young, and he's got more growth to do than Keontae right now. But he's shown signs from, you know, just his defensive length and presence and his character and his desire to become good. And I think that he got a taste. So I don't think it was bad or a waste. I think that he got a taste of the NBA, and I think that he's got a great desire to work really hard this summer and get better.
What do you want to see from the three young guys this summer? And, you know, what are some of the what are some uncomfortable positions that you guys as an organization can put them in order to kind of expedite growth and development?
Well, we have pretty well, we've organized, you know, plans for them for the whole summer. And so I think they're excited about it, but it's going to be tough. It's going to be a lot of work. But they will play in the summer league, assuming they're healthy and still doing well. But, yeah, we plan on them playing in the summer league along with whatever draft picks we have, along with Darius Baisley and Kenny Lofton. You know, the free agents, we're not sure, like Johnny Juzang, but those guys are in our plans, and we'll see what they'll be with us throughout the summer.
An understanding on Keontae, looks like it takes about 5,000 pick and rolls to get good at it. Like on wing, big wings, it takes like 3.5 years to before they. So what are the benchmarks that you're looking at with that understanding on a Keontae or a Taylor in their first sample size that you got in what's obviously a much longer process?
Yeah, so I'll talk about Keontae first. I would say Keontae, you know, played small forward last year as a freshman at Baylor. He played point guard for the first time in his life this year. He's a full-time NBA point guard, and like I said, half the games he played this year, he's the focal point of the opposition defense. I think that is a great learning experience, like learning to run pick and rolls. He's like way better now than he was to start the season. I'm still not sure he's a franchise point guard, but I think he can play point guard, but I think that he can play with another guard playing the point, and he can play off the ball too. Matter of fact, he's probably more comfortable at that at this moment in time. But this experience of learning the point guard position was a big step for him, and it just provides a lot of versatility for our team going forward.
Danny,
did I answer your question?
Yeah, you did.
No, okay.
How about Taylor?
Oh, Taylor. Yeah, so I think Taylor is, like I said, he's just a little further behind than Keontae. And so, yeah, he's doing the same thing. I mean, he's trying to, as you saw, his shooting was getting better and better. He was working a lot on his shooting and his arch of his shot. It's been a little bit flat. But he shot a pretty good percentage, I think, in the last month or so of the season, started knocking down those shots. That's a big step for him. But he's got to get a lot better defensively, handling the ball. We saw in the last game where they actually ran some of Lowry's plays for him, and he made some really nice passes on the move, on the dribble. There's a lot of good signs for Taylor going forward. And same with Bryce. Bryce the same way, I would say, with Taylor. They're in a different way. Bryce has a good feel for the game. He's got a better knack of scoring than Taylor, but his shooting, I think he's a better shooter than his numbers would indicate this year, but he can pass and he can shoot and he can score.
Danny, you know where the team ranks defensively, 30th. It's not great, but how –
I think we were 29th at one time.
Oh, Basketball
this year.
Reference just told me 30th. So
yeah, 30th now. I think you're right.
do you think that's a? Do you think your rotation, your player personnel should be 30th defensively? And I guess is there a coaching piece to that you'd like to see improve or change in some way? You know, a defensive coordinator hire or something like that can make a difference.
It has to be better. I mean, that's horrible. I don't think anybody would dispute that. You guys will get to talk to Will in a little while and let him discuss some of we all know that defensively we're not good enough. Yeah, no question about it. We need to get better. Personnel and more of an emphasis. I mean, as a coach, it's really hard because we love our coach. And the hard thing is, like, there's so many things that we need to get better at. And you can't just throw every bit of it on there. Like, you got to go in phases, especially with so many of the young guys and without the veteran presence. So there's priorities during the season. Ball movement, spacing, running was more of a priority than the defense. It's, like, hard to emphasize all of it. But, yeah, our personnel wasn't good enough. That's on me.
Danny, when you played, 4 years was the common factor. And young men were more prepared mentally and physically to play. How have you had to adjust now looking at a multitude of 19-year-olds who become 20 during the season, and as you look at this younger group of draftees that are be coming in, how have you changed on your patient level and trying to say, okay, he's NBA ready, he's not, and then formulate a plan and as you look out into the future on how long your plan will take if they're not mentally or physically quite ready? Because you've seen it all from, you know, your playing days to what Boston was able to do, and now such the youth movement in the NBA. Isn't it just a totally different plan that you have to map out?
Yeah, it's more difficult. When you're trying to project futures of 18-year-olds, it's just harder. There's no question about it. It's more unpredictable. But I'll tell you a funny story about that. And how the plan, everybody wants, like, this plan, including Ryan. Ryan loves a plan. Like, he's a tech guy. He's got a plan. But I wish basketball were that way. I wish we could just, like, organize it, plan it. We're going to draft this guy in the future. We're going to trade for this guy in the future. But that's not how basketball works. But we draft Kendrick Perkins out of high school. And he weighed, I think, 310 pounds. He'll try to tell you that he had that he got 28 in the 3-minute run, and that he had a 30-inch vertical in the draft workouts. But I think it was 22 3-minute run and 22% body fat. And Kendrick was on this plan where we're just going to develop him. So he had to lose 30 pounds. He had to get stronger. And I remember the first day from my office, I looked down, and he's, like, taking his shirt off in the weight room. He was so proud of himself and how he looked. And he became a big piece of our championship runs. The next year, we had a draft workout with, you guys are familiar with, Al Jefferson. Al Jefferson comes in for his draft workout, and Doc goes, "You're not serious about this guy, are you?" I go, "Yeah, like, if he's available, like, he's probably our guy." He goes, "You got to be kidding me." So I said, "Hey, he's on the Kendrick plan. You know, like, with the 19-year-old guys, you got to, like, we got a G League now. We got a whole new strength team. We got so many opportunities for them to grow before they come to have to play with a good Boston team at the time." So anyway, Kendrick, after the first day of training camp, Doc comes into my office and goes, "He's starting. Al Jefferson's our starting big man." And so, like, that wasn't the plan. It wasn't my plan when we drafted him. He's got a lot of things to learn, but that was, I mean, Doc said, "He's better than our veterans," like, immediately. So that does happen too. And so you just don't know. And I think that with Keontae, there was some of that this year. Keontae, it wasn't our plan for him to be a starter going into training camp. You guys were in training camp. You saw, like, he was good. He was a good player. He earned the respect of the coaches and his teammates, and, like, he earned that job. It wasn't given to him. And I think that that's just, you know, but you don't draft a 19-year-old rarely. There's some that, you know, LeBron at 19 was pretty good. But most of the time they need time to develop. And so we have ways to develop them, and we don't have to be in a rush.
Danny, I just wanted to get your reaction to something that Lowry said recently in speaking with him. He asked about kind of the process that the team has been going through the last couple of years, and what could possibly be, like, more just, like, waiting for things to get better. And he said, "My job is to get good enough to where they can't lose, and I speed up the process." So I just wanted to get your reaction to that.
I mean, that's a great answer. you know, if you were going to tell me that Lowry was upset, then that would be a great answer too. Like, good, let's go do something about it. And but Lowry has been great. Like, his leadership skills are growing. He wants to teach the young guys that they can push themselves even more. I think when you're 19, back to your question, like a lot of the challenges are 19 at 19 and 20, you don't even really know how much you can do. Like, you don't have any realization of or understanding of what your max is in your work and your preparation. But Lowry's done well with that, and I think his plans are to be around here a lot this summer and spend a lot of time with our young guys and just get them to elevate that work to his level. That would be huge. Him and Colin are fantastic at that. Like, I want every player to work with Colin in their workout because he is a psycho. I mean, his intensity, I see him out there pushing sleds, you know, like up and down the court. No one else is even in the facility. He's out here shooting. It's legendary. You guys all know about the stories of him working at 6:30 in the morning on game days and out here shooting. And he doesn't ever seem tired. So I think that having those two guys in the organization right now are big with their leadership and their work ethic.
Danny, you've talked a lot about the young players. I want to ask you about Jordan Clarkson and his role moving forward with this franchise. He's stuck around through multiple trade windows when there's been rumors about him. What do you want from a guy like him this summer?
The same thing. You know, we love Gordon's character and leadership. He loves to play basketball. But I think he can be a big help if we improve our team this year, this offseason. Like, Jordan can be, as we've seen here, he's a really good player. He can score off the bench. He knows how to play, and he's been a fantastic player for the Jazz. And we hope that he continues to be.
As far as Summer League is concerned, are the plans to have all three of the rookies there, plus whoever you have incoming, or is there going to be a change there?
So our plan today, again, after all the medicals and everything else come back, but yeah, our plan is to have Walker playing in the Summer League and our three rookies from this past year and Lofton and Baisley, who are under contract, Jason Preston, all those guys should be involved in our summer league. And then free agency will dictate some others. Like, Johnny Juzang is a free agent as an example. We like him going forward, but he would be another one if that worked out.
It's a little off topic, but BYU just announced they hired Kevin Young, and he's been in the NBA a long time, and I just wonder what you can tell basketball fans about him.
Oh, wow. That's a really good get for BYU. I tried to hire Kevin about 10 years ago to run our G League organization back in Boston. He was a guy that we interviewed last year for the head coaching job here and was incredibly impressive. And I knew after those interviews that he would be a head coach. I thought a head coach in the NBA anytime soon. I know he was in the Brooklyn chase and in the Charlotte chase as well, and should have been. That's a great, great get for BYU. Unbelievable. That's fantastic. Thanks for sharing that news. It's great. It's awesome. Let's go Cougs.
Danny, you talked earlier about kind of the general trajectory of the draft, especially at the top, but I kind of wanted to ask, especially around the number 8 slot, what you think about that, and then around the turn of the draft, the 25 to 35 picks that you guys project to have.
Yeah, so, you know, Andy, I'm going to be completely honest and say, like, I'm not sure. I wish I knew. Now, there are a few to a handful of players that I really like. At 8, I have no idea if they'll be there. You know, like, I'm not there yet. And just having it all the way down to the top 30 players. We were just in a meeting in here, like, we're trying to figure that out, our order of things. So I'll be in touch. You can check back with me in a week or two. I may have a little more information. Or the combine. You go to the combine?
I think so, yeah.
You go to the combine?
Yeah.
Nice.
If you
we can be in contact then, and we should know a lot more by then.
If you How much does looking at the rest of the West impact your planning? Because if you look at the West right now, probably the seven biggest stars in the league for seven of the eight biggest stars in the league for the next decade are probably all sitting in the West right now. Like, does that impact your planning at all or how you try to project your franchise?
Absolutely. I mean, when I'm sitting there at trade deadline and we're a 23rd ranked team, even though we had a better record than, say, Houston, and we were right in the mix with the Lakers and Golden State at that time, I don't think we're as good as them, as any one of those three teams. When we were 100% healthy, I didn't believe that we were. And but absolutely, I mean, I'm really excited to watch the play-in tournament tonight. Like, are you kidding me? New Orleans and the Lakers and Golden State and Sacramento. I mean, those are like really good basketball teams, and they're in a play-in tournament. I don't think the East is that deep and that strong, but the West definitely is. But we do take that into consideration for sure.
Players that's considered
this
to be,
is good. You guys are participating. I like this. Most of the time, you just sit there.
We participate to ourselves all the time. We fight all the time. But Bowler mentioned players that are NBA ready, and then what I see sometimes is players that are strictly have a college game. You know, and they're good in college, but it doesn't translate into the NBA. One player that I'm interested in your comments on is Edie from Purdue. What Ooh. Kind of player can he be?
Ooh, that's a really controversial topic there.
Yeah.
We have a lot of discussions internally about Edie, and there's both sides of the fence mm-hmm. with him and his future in the NBA. Personally, I'm a fan.
Mm-hmm.
I like him. I don't know what that means. I'm not saying that. Do I think he's like a franchise center we can build our whole franchise around? I don't see that yet, but I do see him as an asset to a team. What do you think?
The league is smaller, and what I saw in that championship game, I mean, he just strictly low post.
Are you saying Mark Eaton couldn't play in the game today?
The game was a lot different then.
I know, but I'm saying in the game today. You're saying he can't play in the game today?
He probably was better than Mark right now because Mark didn't have an offensive game.
Mark didn't get in a game. At UCLA. I played against Mark the year before he came out in the draft. He didn't even play in the game. He's like a Hall of Fame player over here in Utah's Hall of Fame. Like, what are you talking about? Like, the game has changed, I understand, but I mean, Zach is the college player of the year for 2 years in a row. Yeah, there's like an enormous difference. Agreed. The game in college and the game in Europe are completely different than our game. No doubt about it. Completely different. Yeah. But I'm a fan, but there's some people on our staff that aren't. But they're, I think the his fan, he's growing more fans upstairs. The first what?
Well, to be college player of the year.
Oh, no. A lot of college players of the year aren't drafted one. I think Jimmer Fredette was 9. I was college player of the year. I was drafted 31, so.
What do you take away from mid-December to mid-January when the team wins 15 out of 19? Guys are playing. I realize Fontecchio and Olynyk didn't remain with the team. Fontecchio started. Kelly came off the bench. But you beat, say, some of the best teams in the league, lots of playoff teams that are all still playing during that stretch. Do you look at that segment of the season and say, we're close? Do you look at that segment and say, these are keepers? Do you look at that segment? Was it a positive experience for the team?
Yeah, it's a positive experience. I mean, I thought that maybe the best win in 2 years might have been the Oklahoma City win here at home because they had their players. Their best players were playing and they played pretty well. It wasn't like they just completely showed up in Utah and wet the bed. It was a good game, and our guys played well, and we fought hard to win that game. But a lot of those wins are deceiving. And regular season that's not my thing. I'm all about playoffs, and we're talking about evaluating players. Like, the college game is different. Well, regular season and playoffs are a lot different, too. And That's my job, is to like determine playoff basketball and how good are we in the playoffs, not regular season. And, you know, so like any team in our in the NBA, if there was a G League team in the NBA, they could win 15 games. Someone on the team will average 18 points a game. Someone on the team will get 10 rebounds. Like they're I have enough respect for the amount of depth of players there are in the world. But the game changers, the teams that have like three guys that are, you know, franchise level players, and you know, in that stretch, you know, we played a lot of games that the best player on the other team didn't show, or the second best player on the team wasn't there, or they were resting to come to Utah. I mean, that's frustrating because it's not, you know, because it's not winning and losing is what matters at the end. But it's our job to evaluate who we really are. Are we 7-16 or are we the 15-4? And the most recent always isn't the best indicator of what you are. And that's the hard part of this business. And like David asked the question about like the Western Conference or Ron, and it does matter. Who's in the West and who we're playing against and who we're evaluating ourselves against matters. And anyway, some people could argue that, like if we were better or not, but internally we were unanimous that we weren't.
Danny, I'll shut up after this, but I'm just curious, in the last 3 weeks in the broadcast booth, the conversation has been, because the Jazz, just the way that the NBA schedule was, I think it was the second hardest finishing schedule in the NBA after the All-Star break. So we saw a lot of potential playoff-bound teams who are aging, and thus if we don't get to the next level, this team may implode, may have to go through a rebuild with a lot of high-level talent, aging talent, veterans. How much, if teams are beat and knocked out tonight, compared to the rest of the 1-8s as the West playoffs begin, how much of their decision-making could or will impact some of your decisions on players that could pop out and be available that are 6 or 7 year vets?
Well, 6 or 7 years, that's different than aging. I don't consider
there's a lot
six
of 14 and 15s
aging.
Out there too.
There's a lot of 14, 15. We're not really interested in dinosaurs. We're interested in like good 6 or 7 years. That those are good players. But I'm not saying that we wouldn't go get some veteran player for a short term fix while we buy us some time, but that's not as likely as possible. But, yeah, there's a lot of guys, some of my favorite players I've ever watched playing are out there on some of those aging teams.
I think a lot of those teams told us that the Jazz would be such a player in the offseason in multiple ways, in free agency, obviously the draft, but also using the picks to move or make some decisions.
Yeah, so I think most likely draft and trades is the most likely way to make moves. I mean, you guys see it in the NBA now over the last year or two or three, like free agency is getting less and less. There's less franchise player. I mean, everybody's signing contract extensions. And so there's less players in free agency nowadays. Doesn't mean there aren't good players. Like I said, the depth in basketball is elite right now. There's a lot of players out there that can play. And we see that in our team. Like we bring in guys like Baisley and Lofton, who are two of the top big guys in the G League, and they come in and they belong in the NBA. There's no doubt about it. Johnny Juzang spent the last 2 years in the G League. Like he belongs in the NBA. They can play a role in the NBA for sure. So that's what we're dealing with. Like we can get some good young players, and that's what that's why we signed them, is to like watch them this summer, watch them in training camp, watch them develop, and maybe you find a guy or two that can really help your team. But the transformative players, you know, are hard to come by, and that's what we're looking to do. We're looking to find one of those. You have any ideas? You can text me any of the ideas. Anybody can text me any of those ideas. I'm open to your opinions.
I wanted to go off Booner's question about Zach Edey and just how you balance older prospects in the draft versus bringing in enough a one-and-done type player. How do you balance the two in terms of evaluating them?
That's a good question. I'm not sure there's just a direct answer. I mean, everybody's unique and different. There's value in players that play for 4 years in college or 3 years in college, or in some cases this year with 5 years in college with all the COVID rules. There's some 23 and 24-year-old players. And those players have value. They can come in and play right away in some cases. There's not as much of a development plan. They can come in and start in an NBA game. So I would just say that I would say statistically that the younger guys would pan out better in the draft, and there's a reason why they're one and done. Not always, but and that doesn't mean that we're neglecting the 23, 22, 24-year-old kids in the draft either. They all have a place. And there's great stories for all those scenarios.
Anybody else? Thank you.
Thanks, Danny. Bye, guys. Thank you.
That is Jazz CEO Danny Ainge.